We live in a miraculous and fascinating world. Welcome to the Bible's Greatest Mysteries. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. And if you watched last week's program, then you know that every week we're going to get an assignment from our big boss, Tom Horn. And he gave us quite an assignment this week.
Oh, he did.
We mentioned it last week. Those of you who paid attention noticed that we read ahead to see what was going on, trying to be good students. But here you go. Just second half of the. But really quickly, we're going to talk about the news because Tom, again, he says, I want you to talk about the current news. And, you know, there's an item in the news that a lot of people aren't even aware of, and that's that there are satellites going into orbit, into low Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, mind you, there are things going through our atmosphere all the time. Meteorites,
mm-hmm.
fireballs that come into our orbit, and they actually go into our atmosphere and land on Earth. They're called, as I said, meteorites. There have been a lot of those lately. Some are really pretty big. Well, Elon Musk and others are putting microsatellites into the low Earth orbit mm-hmm. atmosphere, and it's becoming so congested up there that it's starting to actually block the stars. Astronomers aren't happy about this.
No. And there are some people who are seeing some of the light reflecting off of these satellites as they travel across the sky and thinking that they're unidentified aerial phenomena.
Exactly. And it makes you wonder, is that part of the deception as we go forward? And that gets us into today's assignment.
This
week's big assignment. Timothy Alberino.
Yes.
He's one of my favorite people, and he's also become one of my favorite authors. He's got a brand new book out that, oh my goodness, if you've ever met Tim Alberino, he is the ultimate adventurer.
He is.
He just has that look like he should be, you know, smoking a cigar and climbing a mountain, which he does.
But he's also a very deep thinker, and he's got a new book called Birthright, in which he explores some fascinating topics, including the possibility of a civilization that existed before Adam and Eve.
Before Adam and Eve?
Yes. We had the opportunity to talk with Tim, and here's what he had to say.
Because I believe that the biblical narrative presumes a pre-Adamic paradigm. In other words, mankind was not created in the very beginning. That's evident in the story of Genesis, that first the heavens and the earth were created. And so there's this sequential creation story that's unfolding. And man comes at the end of it, the culmination of it, on the sixth day. And so I believe that there are eons of untold history that predate Adam, in which a whole history was unfolding that I believe the Bible alludes to.
Why do you call angels the elder race?
You know, the term angel is intentionally ambiguous in the Bible. It doesn't have a whole lot of explanatory power. So angel means messenger, one who is sent, an envoy. And it's not even exclusively used to describe these non-human entities that we encounter in the biblical narrative of the angels. It's also sometimes used to describe human envoys or messengers. So it's it's a word that lacks description. In other words, it doesn't describe the nature of the person that it's denoting, of the entity that it's denoting. It just describes their occupation. So somebody's functioning in the role of an angel, whether it be a non-human or human being. When contemplating these beings in the biblical narrative that we describe as angels, I was trying to think of a term for my own purposes and my own paradigm, to think of a term that better describes them. And so it was sort of a natural thought for me to consider two of the attributes that I think are most important when thinking about these beings in relationship to us, the fact that, A, they're older than us, hence elder, and B, that they constitute a race, a civilization this is a race of beings that distinct from us, and they constitute a civilization. So this is an older race of beings, older than the human race. So in relationship to us, they're an elder race. And so that was much easier for me in terms of the way that I was writing my book and referencing these beings, rather than using the term angel, which again is ambiguous. And ambiguous by design, intentionally ambiguous, because I think that there's a prohibition in place of contact between us and them, a prohibition put in place by God, because contact between our races can be dangerous, both for the angels and for us, because as I wrote in my book, men are often inclined to worship what they cannot comprehend. And so if we encounter angels, and this has happened in the biblical narrative a few times, we encounter angels, these exalted superior beings, what's the first inclination of a human being? It's to prostrate mm-hmm. and to worship this entity, which even John, who was a disciple of Christ and saw the resurrected Christ, still prostrated before an angel and had the impulse to worship the angel. And the angel's recoil is very telling, where he says, "You must not do that," right? And the reason why he had that recoil was, "Don't do that, because it's bad for you, and it's also bad for me," I think is what's implied there. Because, you know, not only are men inclined to worship angels, angels apparently are also inclined to receive worship from men, and that leads to all kinds of problems. So it's a two-way street there. So there's a prohibition of contact there that I discern in the biblical narrative that I think is important. But very obviously, we're dealing with two different races, an elder race and a younger race. We're the younger race. Mm.
The Bible tells us that Adam was created from the soil of the earth. The angels, then, being the elder race, predate the earth. What can we assume or infer about what the nature of their creation? What was the substrate on which God built the angels?
This is a really good question, because, again, this goes back to my statement that I believe that the biblical narrative presumes a pre-Adamic paradigm, in that the angels were obviously created before the earth, according to Job, where the sons of God shouted for joy when the earth was created. So, and then following the creation of the earth came Adam. And I think that I don't think that it's rational to suppose that the angels popped into existence and were suddenly shouting for joy within a period of a few days, and then the earth was creating and then mankind. I think what we see here is a cosmic scene in which the angels were pre-existing the creation of the earth for a long time. And then suddenly God decides to create the earth, and then, of course, he creates the human race. And so Adam is created from the very soil of the realm that he was intended to rule. So the Elohim decided to create mankind from the very soil of the planet that we were created to rule. And I say there's two reasons why Adam was created. There's two primary reasons why we were created. These are the two things that I think describe our purpose. Okay, so a two-pronged purpose of mankind. Number one, our primary purpose is fellowship with the Father. We were created for fellowship with the Father and in the family of God. And I maintain that that includes fellowship with our elder siblings.
Well, that is fascinating stuff, but we just scratched the surface. We'll be talking with Tim for a couple of weeks, I think, at least.
At least. Oh, my goodness. Some of the things that he just discusses and some of the things that are in his book. You really need. His book is available at Amazon, by the way. Birthright by Timothy Alberino. It goes into some things that we didn't get a chance to talk with him with, but one of the topics we did ask him about was Atlantis, and you're going to hear more about that after the break.
A child who is trafficked is sexually abused on average 5 to 15 times a day, and only 1% of these crimes are ever reported. This unimaginable darkness must be stopped. And right now, we want to invite you to join us in the fight to end child sex trafficking. Skywatch TV is proud to announce the Silent Cry Help the Children package. When you order the groundbreaking new feature documentary movie Silent Cry from film visionary Josh Peck, you'll learn firsthand from the world's most renowned experts in the fields of trafficking, pedophilia, and Satanism how Hollywood elites are actively engaged in the sexual exploitation of children, why the mainstream media and culture are attempting to normalize pedophilia, why we can't depend on the government to eradicate this ever-present evil, and what the risks are to you, your family members, and community. communities. Plus, the lead authorities from the silent crime movie are back in the never-before-released Covert Investigation on DVD, featuring pivotal, never-before-seen commentaries that couldn't be included in the original Silent Cry film. From cases of demonic possession to satanic perversion, experts on the front lines discuss the worst crimes fathomable being committed against the most innocent amongst us. You'll also receive the brand new MP3 audio series on CD, A Cult of Perversion. In this explosive series, experts like Russ Dizdar, William Ramsey, and others share extremely sensitive research into the most perverse evils plaguing our country now, proving through over 12 hours of content that believers must combat this spiritual malevolence for the sake of our children. This incredible package also includes the never-before-released DVD Fake News or Hidden Truths. Join investigative researcher Stephen Bancars as he guides you through the most current research into the Pizzagate scandal. Is it all conspiracy? Who is involved? How does it pertain to events unfolding right now? Stephen shares explosive new revelations on the subject that have come to light since Pizzagate first broke and haven't been revealed to the public until now. Finally, the paradigm-shattering audio series by Dr. Thomas Horn himself, The Hidden Occultism of Epstein's Orgy Island. What demonic atrocities were going on at Epstein Island? And who were the high-powered individuals involved in some of the darkest occultic activities the world has ever witnessed? The contents of this mind-boggling three-part exclusive MP3 audio series comes directly from the private vault of Dr. Thomas Horn. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of $135. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling while supplies last. An excess of 500,000 children are being trafficked every single day in our country alone. Now is the time to take action. 100% of the profits from your donation for the Silent Cry Help the Children package goes directly to Whispering Ponies Ranch, a safe haven where children who have been abused in unimaginable ways can find rehabilitation and healing in Jesus Christ. The Silent Cry Help the Children package, available now at SkywatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
The Bible's Greatest Mysteries is part of SkyWatch TV. Follow us online at SkyWatchTV.com.
Welcome back to the Bible's Greatest Mysteries. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. And, you know, we have been having the best time with Timothy Alberino. He's a really interesting man. Do you know that he's been down to Peru?
Yes, he was down there and accompanied our friends, Dr. Judd Burton, L.A. Marzulli, mm-hmm. and they investigated the Paracas skulls, the elongated skulls, and just some very interesting anomalies connected with those. And that, I'm sure, is a topic that we'll discuss in the future.
Oh, yeah.
But in his book, Birthright, he dives into a topic that I somehow missed when I wrote Last Clash of the Titans, which shows the overlap between the Greek gods and the gods that God talks about in the Bible. But
Know that God actually talks to he refers to small g gods?
Oh,
no,
yeah.
It is not a pantheon in heaven. It is not. They don't co-rule with him.
Oh, no. No.
Humans have that birthright.
Psalm 82 is essentially a courtroom scene in heaven where God talks to these angelic beings who have not ruled in his name justly and has condemned them to death. And it was the understanding, not just of the early church, but the Jews of Jesus' day, that these were the angels, the gods of the pagan neighbors of ancient Israel. So the early church, they understood that Zeus, for example, was real, just a fallen angel. Apollo was real, but a fallen angel, and that they're under a death sentence.
Oh, my goodness. That's fascinating. And I think that if kids today understood that, they wouldn't be satisfied with the Marvel movies and the DC movies anymore, because the stories that are in the Bible, the historical facts that are in the Bible are so much more interesting, so much more fascinating. In fact, if you think of the greatest superhero of all time, many people will say, well, it's probably Superman. Nuh-uh. It's Jesus Christ.
Yeah, because he did battle with the giants because, well, as we go into in our book, Giants, Gods, and Dragons, the origin of demons were those giants, those mighty men who were of old, who lived before the flood.
By the way, you can get Giants, Gods, and Dragons through the SkyWatch TV store, SkyWatchTVStore.com. There are some really great offers there. Real, I mean, deals that are just crazy. There are a lot of people that joke and say, okay, you buy, you know, 1,000 books from Tom Horn, it's $39.95. Not quite that good a deal, but they really are very good deals. So go to skywatchtvstore.com. Mm-hmm. And if you just want to know about our books, type just Gilbert in mm-hmm. the search box and they'll all come up.
Price is better than Amazon, which is why you should go there. And also, as we mentioned last week, it supports the work at Whispering Ponies Ranch.
So much so. Tim yes. Alberino and Atlantis.
Yes, as we speaking of the flood, mm-hmm. The flood myth is actual history. And this is another topic we'll dig deeper into with the archaeologists and geologists mm-hmm. in the months and years ahead. But as Tim points out, the memories of Atlantis were preserved in these stories, not quite accurately according to actual history.
Remember, we're getting fake news. It's coming from
right.
the fallen realm.
Right. So the way I should put this is this way. Actual history has been twisted and preserved in the memories of Atlantis. And we talked about this with Tim Alberino.
Well, you know, Ellis Bailey wrote a book called, a very influential book, that was called The Externalization of the Hierarchy. The hierarchy of which Bailey writes and which she used to talk about represented a basically the elder race that I talk about, but the bad guys. Of course, in her mind, these would be the good guys. Mm-hmm. But now this hierarchy is beginning to externalize itself in the world, that this hierarchy was the externalization of the hierarchy was a return to the Atlantean times. That this was a representation that the earth was that a new golden age was coming. In fact, that's where the term New Age comes from. The term New Age is directly associated with a new golden age. And so in Blavatsky's and then in Alice Bailey's philosophy, their goal, their desire was to bring about the resurrection of the golden age and a situation in which the old gods once again walked among us and that we could commune face to face, that the renewing, and this is what Albert Pike also talked about in Morals and Dogma, that the renewing of our communion with the gods, face-to-face communion, that would be restored in the earth. And this is, if you get into Masonry and into the rites and secrets of Masonry, you realize that this is the prime objective of the Masonic order is to bring about the resurrection of the Golden Age and enthrone the philosopher king, who I believe is the Antichrist. And of course, theosophy and the works of Ellis Bailey and the New Age movement in general believes in, they have a Christ figure, and they call him their Christ figure, and this Christ figure is precisely who Christians would identify as the Antichrist. And so they're actively pursuing this. This isn't just a spiritual concept. This is an actual reinvigoration, a resurrection of the golden age in which the gods are walking among men in the flesh. And this harkens back to all of the lore, the myth and lore surrounding the Golden Age, all throughout ancient history, almost every major, almost every primary ancient civilization had a Golden Age mythos.
The Greek account of the destruction of Atlantis, then, is that just a twisted memory of the flood that God sent to cleanse the world of those demigods?
Yes, the story of Atlantis is an allegory of the Golden Age. It's an allegory of the antediluvian world. You know, Atlantis was created by Poseidon. Poseidon created the island of Atlantis, and he was enamored of a human woman. He took her as his wife, and he copulated with her. And she gave birth to five sets of male twins. And to these twins, he divided the governance of Atlantis between them, as to his hybrid sons, into the empire. Atlantis wasn't just a city, it was an empire. And so these five, and the dominant one was Atlas, who's the dominant son. And so these five hybrid twin sons of Atlantis, and other accounts, some ancient Indian accounts, refer to the sons of Atlantis of Poseidon as giants, interestingly enough. And mm-hmm. so I don't know I don't believe that was a literal story, but I do believe it's an intentional allegory of the golden age of the golden age of Zeptepi, the first time, as the Egyptians have it. And so, and by the way, in my book, I point out some very interesting correlations between the story of Atlantis and the dragon, the red dragon of Revelation, and some of the things that are unfolding. So there's very interesting correlations.
So the ten kings of Atlantis and the ten horns on the seven-headed dragon.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that I believe that I have a different view of the dragon and the dragon, the seven-headed dragon of Revelation, and the beast that rises out of the sea. By the way, he's presiding over the rise of the beast. He's standing on the shore of the sea, and he's presiding over the rise of the beast. And the beast is—he's not a mirror image of him, but he's made in the likeness of the dragon. He's got seven heads and so forth. He's got the horns, except for the horns are in different positions, which represents a impartation of authority from the dragon to the beast, which we know happens. The dragon gives him his authority. Remember, the dragon bestows the beast with his authority. So the transposition of the crown from the heads of the dragon to the horns of the beast. And then you have, Atlantis, according to the ancient accounts, not Plato, but according to some of the other accounts, was there were seven realms. There was basically an empire that governed seven continents, over seven continents, according to Manly P. Hall. And he was deriving his sources from very ancient sources. I mean, his information was derived from very ancient sources. And so you have this correlation, this strange correlation between the sons, the kings, the ten kings, and then the ten kings of the beast, and then of course you plug that into the statue that Nebuchadnezzar, the one we already mentioned, previously mentioned, the dream of Nebuchadnezzar in which he sees a statue cast in different metals, and you have the head of the statue, which represented his own empire. Daniel informs him of this, was cast in gold. The chest and arms were cast in silver, which most scholars believe that represents the Medo-Persian Empire, which is appropriate because it was the combination of two kingdoms to make one empire. You know, there's two arms, so very appropriate. Then you have the midsection that was made of bronze, which is obviously representative of the Grecian Empire. And then you have the legs of iron, which is the Roman Empire, and very appropriately so because the Roman Empire divided into two, the East and West. You have two legs, so a very appropriate depiction there. And then the final empire was the feet, which were cast in iron mixed with miry clay. And I believe that on the surface, that is an accurate depiction of the predecessor of the Roman Empire, which would have been the Holy Roman Empire, which was based in what is today Germany. And it's a very accurate depiction because it was it says that this empire that in Daniel that it was both fragile and strong, which is sort of a paradox, but that makes sense if you think of the Holy Roman Empire, because the Holy Roman Empire was very strong. It was the strongest strongest empire in the aftermath of Rome, but it was also very weak because it was fragmented. It was an amalgamation of different cultures that spoke different languages, and so that was the surface interpretation of the feet, the iron mixed with clay. But I believe that there's a deeper interpretation to that, because Daniel says, referring, by the way, he references the kings, because he says in the days of these kings, so the God of heaven establish a kingdom, an everlasting kingdom, in the days of these kings. So wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. Which kings? These are successive empires. They come and go. The Babylonians came and went. The Medo-Persians came and went. The Greeks came and went. The Romans came and went. So these kings must represent the feet, right? Mm-hmm. In the days of these kings, the ten toes correlating with the ten horns of the beast, right? The days of these kings, those are the kings he's talking about. We know those are kings. We're told those are kings in the book of Revelation. And they give their power, basically their allegiance, consolidated in the one horn in who we call the Antichrist, right? So in the days of these kings, and so when it references those ten toes, you have a reference to kings. We can assume there's ten. Ten kings, ten toes, the days of these kings. And then there's this enigmatic statement that Daniel makes, and they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men.
Right.
In reference to this empire, this final empire, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron does not mix with clay. So then you realize something else is going on here, because these are kings. They're not going to cleave to one to another. They're mingling themselves with the sons of men. So I think, a long story short here, I think what we're looking at is to some degree, a reoccurrence of the Genesis 6 affair on some level, that the gods are once again going to mingle with men, that there's going to be 10 kings who are their progeny. That's what I believe, that they're going to be their progeny, just like Poseidon and the 10 kings of Atlantis, who were hybrid kings. Poseidon married a human woman. So again, long story short, and giving away part of the punchline of my book, I believe that at the end of the age, the end of this age, I believe that the dragon is going to produce a hybrid son with a human woman, just like the Watchers did in the days of Jared, and that this hybrid son is going to be that person who we identify as the Antichrist, but the Bible calls him the son of perdition, the man of sin. And I believe that he will be the son of the dragon. Literally the son of the dragon. And by the way, I also believe that the other kings in his empire who are under his dominion are also going to be the hybrid sons of the dragon's companions.
Well, as we said, Tim is a deep, deep thinker who has really done research on this and is not afraid to go out in the field chasing down the evidence of these stories to prove the truth of the Bible. And that's why we appreciate him and many of our friends that you'll be seeing in the months and years ahead. And this is why Tom Horn has entrusted us with this program. And we are grateful to have this opportunity to do this.
Aren't we, though? You know, and if you're sitting there with your loved ones, and especially if you have younger loved ones in the household, we would encourage all of you to contact us in the email again.
BGM@skywatchtv.com.
BGM as in Bible's Greatest Mysteries.
Yes.
@skywatchtv.com.
Send us your questions and we're compiling a list of things to research. There are so many questions that we want to research. So little time, but we will do the best we can in the months and years ahead.
And I want to see drawings of Jesus as a superhero.
That would be fantastic. Thank you for watching. This is the Bible's Greatest Mysteries from Skywatch TV.